And welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I am one of your hosts, Allison with an I, joined today by my co-host, Allison with a Y.
Hello.
And Patrick.
Hello.
Hello. So this week we've got a movie that I chose, kind of newer movie for Netflix, sort of talk of the town when it came out.
Yeah, newer movie in general. Very, like, that came out earlier this year.
Did it come out around Valentine's Day?
It did, yeah. February, I think, 9th, 2025.
There we go. So that's a clue into what we watched this week. We watched Hard Eyes. Just a quick synopsis of the movie, since, you know, we want you guys to be able to follow along. Hard Eyes follows Allie, played by Olivia Holt, a recently dumped marketer, as she is stalked by a masked maniac known as the Hard Eyes Killer. This is odd because the Hard Eyes Killer has been known for killing couples around Valentine's Day for the last few years, and Allie is single. However, Allie does have a budding attraction to Jay, played by Mason Gooding, a hotshot consultant whom her employer flies in to fix a disastrous ad campaign she created. While at dinner with Jay, Allie spots her ex with his new girlfriend and kisses Jay to make her ex jealous. The killer is watching and sets out to make Allie and Jay his next victims. When a pair of detectives investigating the case, played by Devon Sawa and Jordana Brewster, mistakenly identify Jay as the killer, Allie and Jay must clear Jay's name, find the murderer, and make sense of their blossoming feelings for each other.
Another installment in the Amon Devon Sawa verse. We've had a lot of Devon Sawa talk on the cast in the past.
Just because of Final Destination?
Yeah, and I think we also saw him in something else super random along the way, but there's been some Sawa chat over the years, and it was fun to see Zaddy Sawa.
He's, you know, he has aged surprisingly well.
I know him only as like a teen or 20s heartthrob.
I didn't recognize him at all until I saw a list of the cast, and I was like, which one was he? And then he was the detective. He was Hobbs.
Yeah, I told Patrick at one point while we were watching it, I was like, he kind of looks like a weird mashup of Daniel Craig and Raul Esparza, and I don't hate it.
I don't know who that second actor is that you just mentioned, but I can see the Daniel Craig thing.
Fair.
It's just our weekly Hannibal the Show shout out.
Yeah, he was in Hannibal. He was a big Broadway person. He was in like my favorite show of all time, Pushing Daisies. He's been in a bunch of things, but not unless you like follow Broadway, he's not necessarily like somebody that you would know super, super well.
Got it. Well, Jordana Brewster was big in the slasher films of the aughts as well.
I know her, I think, maybe almost exclusively from the Fast and the Furious, which I'm a huge simp for. so I was excited to see her just for that reason. What horror has she been in?
She was in The Faculty.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Right.
Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a banger.
It was a banger. This felt so much like those kinds of movies.
Yeah. It's horror for sure, but it has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And it's a good sense of humor.
Yeah, and it kind of stretches the, like, where's the line, right, between horror and humor and just pure tacky cheesy.
Yeah. Why did you pick this one, Allison, with an eye?
Honestly, I don't know. I didn't know much about it. Obviously, I knew the basic premise. It's been, like, trending, right, and since it came out in 2025, I feel like there were a lot of people really excited about it. It keeps coming up on lists of things that I should watch, and... It's on Netflix, and I'm glad I picked it, right? Like, I think it's still, like, people are still talking about it, so.
That's interesting you say you've heard a lot about it since it came out, because to me, I felt like I saw the trailer a few times. It looked generic when I saw the trailer, and then I felt like I didn't hear anything about it afterwards, so I was shocked when you picked it, because I expected just kind of generic slasher, and I was shocked to see that it had decent reviews, people seemed to like it, and yeah, I was also very surprised how much I ended up enjoying it.
Yeah, I remember you picked it, and I was like, I think I've heard of it, and I looked it up, and it had like a really high Rotten Tomatoes score,
80%.
Yeah, at least I was like, okay, all right, let's watch a film.
A film.
And it has a protagonist named Allie in it. So
I know.
So it's appropriate.
Yeah.
So you know it's got to be good.
We've got a third Allison on the show this week.
Which, let me know if either of you feel this way. I feel like putting the lead in this film that's like this, I mean, obviously it's horror, but it's a rom-com genre mashup as well, named Allie, is such a rom-com trope. Like, there's, it's always like the girl next door is always named Allie or Allison.
And this plays with rom-com tropes a lot.
Oh, boy, does it. And I love it.
Yeah. I mean, fuck, even just her being a marketing exec, I feel like there's like two jobs that women have in rom-coms. And you're either a magazine journalist or you work in marketing / advertising.
That's like, so that's real.
It. Yeah.
I don't know. They're also like painters or like artists of some kind.
Yeah. They're always low-key creative. Female protagonists are always creative. Well, or high-key creative, but they're always in a creative profession, I think.
And they're often like creative boss babes.
Yes. Or getting slapped down by a boss babe.
Yeah.
Like they have a domineering boss and they're like trying to become the domineering boss someday, but they just don't have it in them, you know?
Yeah.
Which the boss babe in this is played by an SNL alum, I think you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Michaela Watkins. Funny. Crystal. So I would say that this was like an anti rom-com slasher film, but then it became a rom-com. So I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the whole thing about Allie is that, right, she's completely jaded. She's gone through this heartbreak. Her ex moved on too fast. He's rubbing it in her face. It's all over social media. She's also like looking at his stuff, right? Like her friends are like, don't torture yourself that way. So she's just really like off love, right?
Which, I mean, girl, we've all been there. Right?
Girl. Girl. And it's Valentine's Day, which just makes everything 1,000 times more painful. And I really liked that she meets Jay and they meet in the most tropey, like bump their
such
heads.
A meet cute.
Such a meet cute, but I kind of love that Allie's like, fuck that. Nope, none of that. I liked that it was an anti-rom-com, and then it became a rom-com, and I had feelings about that. But obviously, that's like later in the movie, and we'll have to like flesh this out a little bit before we totally get there. But I will say I really liked the tone. She was kind of like, I'm not going to fall for this. Like, I'm not in the headspace for this. You seem great, but I'm not interested. And that felt like a departure from just so much of the bullshit that we see. Even if it's not trying to be a romantic movie, there's a romance and it follows a formula more times than not.
So to me, I feel like the early, you know, her kind of down with love sort of approach, even that strikes me as a rom-com trope too. You know, the person who's been through the relationship ringer and is just like, no, I'm done. Cute guy, like, you're not going to get the better of me, or cute girl, whatever it may be. You're not going to get the best of me. Even that fits the trope to me, but it plays extra well, I think, in this, as do many things in this movie, because it's written and played very genuinely. You mentioned, you know, she's looking at her phone. She's seeing all these pictures of her ex, whatever. And I don't know. There's just something about how it was written and presented that felt real to me and not pandering. So often you have depictions of technology and the way we live our lives through technology in movies that just seem like they were written by somebody who's never used a fucking phone in their life. But this actually felt real. It felt genuine. And on the performance side, Olivia Holt, I don't even know who she, I think she's like a Disney kid, or at least came off the Disney Channel when I took a quick look at her filmography. And she is just so natural, feels so real. You can feel her sort of despondent feelings about love, but also she's still got a lot of attitude. She just felt like a real person and somebody who I related to and enjoyed right off the bat. So I guess that's where I say she and the script sell the, you know, her aversion to love in a way that feels very natural. And even though it is a trope, it doesn't feel as tropey to me.
I wanted to add that setup where, you know, she's rejecting it at first is very Taming of the Shrew to me, you know, so it follows that kind of rom-com trope. And I really appreciated that because obviously the most beloved, you know, take on the Taming of the Shrew trope, of course, 10 Things I Hate About You, which was, I think, at one point directly referenced in this film.
Along with a laundry list of other rom-coms.
Oh my God, right. What did you guys think about Jay and his, I guess, the actor who played him?
He was a charming motherfucker.
Okay, so I recognized, I had a really weird process with him because I was like, who is this handsome-ass motherfucker? I recognize him. He was in the last couple Scream movies, so he's already got some horror resume, too. And he's fucking Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son.
Whoa!
Yeah, so a couple of surprises when I looked him up and realized the sort of various ways I knew him. But I love this guy. Oh, man. He's a hottie, but also he's just charming. He's just got like effortless kind of screen presence to me. What did you think?
I liked him as well. I do think I was particularly annoyed because I am so like outing myself as a cynic right now when it comes to love. And that's just where I'm at this moment in my life. So sorry to everybody out there who's not, but just guys aren't like that. They're just not, you know, nobody says things that nice. Nobody is that self-aware. Nobody is that charming. No one is that sincere. I think it continues to set up an unrealistic expectation for single girls like me who are like, why don't you just continue to rub it in our faces that that doesn't exist?
That's totally fair. I was watching it and I was like, if I were in this situation with a guy like this, I would be side-eyeing him so hard.
Oh, yeah.
What are you trying to get right now? Because nobody acts like this with any sort of sincerity. Like,
never.
I'm specifically thinking of dinner, date, not date. And it's just like, no, this doesn't happen. And if it does, I'm worried what their motivation is exactly.
It's too good to be true. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. present circumstances aside, I'm inherently a love cynic myself. So I'm always like, what are you really trying at right now?
Yeah. I mean, I've been on the dating market for like, 3 years? And I've gone on a bevy of dates. And people aren't like that, you know? And I think even that interaction was exaggerated for the sake of the rom-com trope. So I don't think we were expected to take it that seriously. Like, it wasn't meant to be, oh, this exists everywhere. You just have to look for it. It's like, no, we're exaggerating this because we're playing, you know, the tone that we're going with in this scene is rom-com versus, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I totally understood the purpose of it for the sake of the film. And like everything is so exaggerated, obviously, especially when you're doing kind of like a bit of a spoof on the rom-com genre as well.
Well, and I think it's, again, a trope that's exploited because she kind of reacts the same way you just said you would, where she's like, okay, I don't really trust this guy. Like, okay, sure, he's hot, but I need to keep my distance. And also, I think they write and he performs the character so that there's a little bit of you're not quite sure if he's a dick, if he's a manipulator. And, you know, there's a chunk of the movie where you're wondering if he might be the killer. That's dispelled pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But early on, I was like, this might be the killer. And I think, you know, it's all intentional.
Yeah,
and
same.
To me, it felt like that character actually became more natural and less awkward and less kind of a creation of rom-com fiction as the movie went along, which I thought was another kind of smart thing that the writers did.
Yeah, I guess his sincerity was like consistent, right? So we were able to like, as the viewer, sort of, he earned our trust.
Yeah.
But I absolutely love the social commentary that all three of us were watching that dinner scene being like, you are way too charming. You might be a serial killer.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's just where we're at right now, guys.
Well, and also it's a horror movie where there's a right, with a course. Masked serial killer. And it's like, okay, we know there's going to be a fucking reveal of who this is. Maybe it's this guy.
When they leave the restaurant and he leaves because she's offended him, and she runs after him and she's like, I'm sorry, I know I was a dick. And he's like, you know what? Don't worry about it. My car is here. All good. And then she kisses him. Did that feel like natural for you guys? Because for me, I was like, that kiss came out of nowhere.
Not at all. It did not feel natural at all. It was so awkward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's supposed to because he's not expecting it, and she's only doing it to piss off her ex who she spotted, right?
No, I thought she used that as an excuse afterwards.
She did, yeah. I had the same thought. Why? Like, they tell a couple people later in the movie, we were only kissing because she was making her ex jealous, but she hadn't even seen her ex yet.
Right, like, he's the one who interrupted the kiss, the ex.
That's right.
Oh, I thought it was implied that she had, like, seen him, and it turned out that like, it was sort of a reveal that that was her actual motivation. Because otherwise, I don't know, yeah, why would she kiss him in that
It was
moment?
Awkward. It wasn't natural. It was weird that she kissed him.
Yeah.
Later in the movie, it's exposed that they were chosen as the couple to target next for these the serial murders because of their chemistry with that kiss. And I'm like, there wasn't any...
True. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they do have chemistry, but the kiss itself feels awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really excited to kind of dig into the writers behind this movie. It's a trio, all men, which kind of shocked me because at a certain point in the movie, I said to Allison with a Y, I was like, a woman has to have written this movie. And specifically, it was because the movie referenced Esther Perel.
Yeah. Which I cackled.
I cackled too.
I love Esther Perel.
I don't think I've ever seen Esther Perel referenced in a horror movie, and I doubt that I ever will again.
That was a deep cut.
A delightful moment. I love that. And it was so on the nose, too. I forget the exact context, but the joke landed perfectly. It was great.
It was incredible.
But the movie's written by Philip Murphy, Christopher Landon, and Michael Kennedy. Philip Murphy, I don't really know anything about, but Christopher Landon has a hell of a resume. He wrote pretty much all of the Paranormal Activity sequels, which, as you Yikes. Can hear about on our episode about those. But since then, he's had a pretty amazing track record and basically all horror stuff. He did the Happy Death Day movies, which I absolutely love. The two of them collaborated on the scripts for Freaky and Time Cut. And then this guy, Michael Kennedy, wrote It's a Wonderful Knife, which I haven't seen, but I've heard is very good. Have you guys seen any of these movies? Any familiarity outside of the mostly awful Paranormal Activity movies that Christopher Landon wrote?
Yeah, obviously I watched all of those. Would not necessarily recommend. But I haven't even seen Happy Death Day, because usually that's not my horror genre.
Happy Death Day, both of them are delightful. Just high concept, time loop. You know, it's horror Groundhog Day. They are very funny. And so it was fun to dig into a little more of their filmography, just because, again, didn't know to expect them being involved in this. And for me, it fit right in with their other stuff, which is all horror, but comedy, too. And not in that, like, gross, like, I don't know, where you undercut everything with a joke, but a genuine mix of both genres that works well on both fronts. Although this time they also threw in rom-com, too, to balance it all out.
Yeah, I had also not seen anything besides Paranormal Activity, which you guys don't knock those. I know you've seen them all, and I know you did that as a big job for the podcast, but there's a special place in my heart for those movies.
Oh, shit. Have you seen all of
them?
We
talked about this when we did.
We did.
Yeah, when we did.
Haunted House.
Yeah. Right. I don't know that I've seen all of them, but I've seen most of them, and I was genuinely entertained by all of them. So
I think you were actually the one who inspired me to suggest all the Paranormal Activity movies
oh, wow.
for Amon. We ran into each other once. We were talking about it, and you just said how much you loved them. And I was like, oh, that might be like a good one to do for watch them all for the podcast.
That is so funny. You're welcome, and I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's not your fault, truly.
Yeah, I think we had some mixed reviews for those. We did have a screw it for, I think we both had a screw it for watching the entire franchise. Yeah. So. There are some good ones. There are some good ones along
the
way. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. It's not all hate.
Yeah. But anyways, talented group of writers bringing their trademark energy that I really love to this movie.
So funny that three male writers can write a character like Jay, but right? can't be a character like Jay. I'm going to go back to my disdain for fucking misrepresenting men in general. There were some really great characters, though. I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Monica, the token best friend of Allie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, talk about a trope.
Oh, my God. She Such was so a trope. Good. I wanted more of her.
Yeah, I was surprised she wasn't in it more, actually. She really kind of faded out about halfway through.
And then
disappeared until the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we like referenced this a little bit earlier in this episode, but that line that she delivers, that's just the title of so many romantic comedy movies.
Yes.
Was so well delivered and like took me a second after she delivered it to be like, ha, 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 that was amazing.
We'll drop in a clip of that here because it deserves to be heard if you haven't seen or aren't planning to see the movie.
It's good.
Clever writing and very well delivered.
Allie, listen to me. You deserve to be happy.
You deserve to have someone love you for the beautiful, neurotic mess that you are.
I mean, you could be so clueless sometimes.
It's one of the 10 things I hate about you, honestly. You can't let Jay go off to his best friend's wedding and hook up with a bunch of bridesmaids and move to Notting Hill. No.
This is love, Mama.
Some kind of wonderful, crazy, stupid love.
Actually.
But yeah, Monica, that actress killed it. She's got the typical sassy best friend energy. She takes Allie to pick out an outfit for her date. There's a good trying on outfits montage.
Love a good outfit montage.
And I like the one she settled on, too. It was not the vibe that I was expecting. It was not the traditional rom-com vibe.
None of them were. None of those looks were like trendy, like 2025 style. It was really odd. Yeah.
At one point, they basically do a nod to Romy and Michelle's high school reunion too, which was so great.
That, I'm so glad you caught that. Why? Because that movie is one of my all-time favorite movies. I just shared it with my daughter this year and she was like, this movie is unhinged. And I was like,
I love it so much.
And I feel like the first episode, the first outfit she tried on was very Cher from Clueless.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
and the whole thing was giving Pretty Woman, right? Like her friend was like, no,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
No. It's just so much good packaged into that scene.
You know, you could call this a spoof, you could call it a parody, but more than anything, it's an homage. Like this is made with clear love for both genres that it's playing with. Yeah. It's a clear homage to both genres.
I'm glad we're talking about this, the three of us, because I truly did not know. I needed to like process through how I felt about the movie with other people. Obviously, with you guys are my favorite people to process through with, but
aww.
We love you.
Aww.
We love you too.
Yeah, this is helping me clarify in my mind how I felt about the movie because I got done with it being like, huh, what was that?
Sometimes the discussion helps me really solidify my feelings too.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about talking movies with people in general, because other people notice things I didn't notice and respond emotionally in ways that I didn't respond. And it can definitely help me sort out thoughts on a movie. But I'm curious, we've talked a lot about the rom-com elements of this, and I'm wondering how y'all felt about the horror elements, especially Allison with a Y, not a slasher fan, not a big gore fan. You like your scares psychological, paranormal. So how were we doing with the gore?
I think when it is a little bit more attached to comedy, I do better with it. And because this was all comedy, like you couldn't really take anything seriously with this film, it really helped. I think it helped also that most of the characters who got it were not particularly likable. I didn't feel too much emotional attachment to many of them. So that helps as well. So yeah, I mean, there were some moments. The opening scene of this movie would have made a great short film.
Yeah.
It's a whole story in and of itself, and I loved it. I had to shield my eyes a little bit for that right at the end of it, but oh boy, it was, yeah, I did okay with it. I did better than I usually do.
Long story short, on the opening sequence, an extremely demanding girlfriend is basically orchestrating her boyfriend's entire proposal to her in a vineyard, and then they are stalked and killed by hard eyes. She ends up getting crushed in like a wine crushing device.
Like a grape press.
Yeah, yeah. It's disgusting and awesome, and great opening. We don't know anything about these characters otherwise. It's just kind of to set up the idea of Hard Eyes and also to give us some violence or some horror, because there really isn't any for a long time after that, which I actually also give this a lot of credit for. Like, it just lets the characters be characters for a while before it gets Hard Eyes back into the mix in a serious way. And there are some very gross kills, but there aren't a lot of kills in the movie, which kind of surprised me, actually.
I almost want to say this movie did horror for me better than rom-com. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't know to expect any rom-com, right? Like, I went into this movie, like I said, not knowing much about it. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for the horror elements, but the gore level in this movie, holy shit. That even that first kill, they spared no expense for it. You know, it was like squishing guts, eyeballs, blood, hair, skull, everything. And some of the kills in this movie were brutal. And then some of them were like hilariously brutal. I mean, there were points where had you like taken, you know, pause the movie and freeze framed it, it was a horror movie, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It definitely does horror well. I mean, the final confrontation with Hard Eyes also gets into some wild violence that I love because I love a good gore moment. Yeah. So kudos to it for that. You know, speaking of that final scene, and obviously we're not going to reveal right now who the killer is. How did you all feel about that final reveal?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not expect it. There was one element to it that I had kind of, you know, but if you had asked me like right before that reveal who the killer was, I don't think I would have guessed properly.
Mm. That was the one, maybe the only underwhelming element of this movie for me. I was, I don't know. And we'll get into it more. I'll say very little because spoilers, but I was underwhelmed by the reveal. Huh. Fortunately, it bopped right back to a lot of other material that I did enjoy to kind of bring things home, and gore that I did enjoy to bring things home. But the actual reveal itself, I was like, eh.
Yeah. I think the reveal itself was one of the times in the movie that I laughed the hardest and was also one of the goriest. So like that was a scene or a couple scenes that did both, in my opinion, well, both the rom-com and the horror. I was right. I did predict. There's so much we can't talk about yet, but I did predict some of the reveal early on in the movie, but not all of it. So that was a fun, different thing. Trying so hard not to say anything wrong, but.
Should we just go to the spoiler room and talk about this? Do we have any other spoiler-free thoughts that we should get into before we do our reviews?
I can't think of any.
Allison, with an I, this was your pick. What would you rate it? View it, cue it, or screw it?
You know, it's going to be a cue it for me. I think that I would recommend this movie to a certain type of person. For my hardcore horror friends, I don't know if they're going to like it. For my rom-com friends, I don't know if they're going to like it. I think this movie really grew on me, but not enough to be like, yes, yes, everyone needs to see that, yes. But definitely not a screw it. Like, I had a lot of fun watching it. It took me by surprise, and I don't feel like I wasted any time. Like, I feel like I'm grateful that we got to watch this together. So for me, it's going to be a cue it. Patrick, what about you?
Big view it. This movie was like if Jay from this movie, not Jay from 1920 London Fear Strikes Again, was a movie. Like, it was just so charming. It completely disarmed me. It swept me off my feet. I was delighted. I was entertained. It had the horror stuff that I love. It had the elements of slasher movies that I do enjoy because slashers are not always my favorite genre. It played with rom-coms in such just a really charming and fun way. I can see what you're saying about the way that it may have its feet a little too much in two separate worlds to fully please either audience. Particularly, I don't think I would just go around recommending this to any old like rom-com enthusiast, because you're probably not looking for decapitations in your rom-com.
Exactly.
It's just fun if you have the tolerance for violence. And I think if you're a horror person too, who can appreciate a little genre play outside of the horror genre specifically, it's a blast. This was so much fun for me. How about you, Allison, with a Y?
Oh, it's also a view it for me. I loved this movie. I was so surprised and delighted by it. I love a good genre mashup. I thought it was so clever how it played with so many different tropes seamlessly. Truly, I guess in my heart of hearts, I feel like horror people will love and appreciate this movie because it is fresh. It's different. There are things that are like kind of predictable about it, but it is far from the most predictable horror movie I've ever seen. And I like that it really offered something new for the audience. And I had so much fun with it. So yeah, big view it for me.
We fell in love with Heart Eyes.
I do. I have heart eyes for Heart Eyes.
Yeah. Well, we got a spoiler vineyard to go to, but before we go there and start getting all fucked up on spoilers, I will encourage you, as always, to visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com, where you can find a full list of every movie, every episode that we've ever done. You can also find a link to our merch store, where you can find shirts and coffee cups and stickers and things like that with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art that I designed on them. We'd also love for you to follow us on social media.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at AmonCast, and TikTok at Amon Podcast, EHMON Podcast. And we also have a Discord community that you can find in the show links. Come join us there. Join our Discord server and chat with us about all of the horror films that we watch and also all of the other ones that you want to talk about with other horror nerds.
And lastly, before we head to the spoiler vineyard, as always, follow us and leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. We love to see that feedback and those reviews. We haven't gotten a review in a while, actually, so it's about time. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the new era of Amon. Let us know how much you love Allison with an I and Allison with a Y, and it'll be great. It'll help people find the show.
You can also let us know how much you love Patrick as well.
Yeah, but there's a lot of reviews out there about... How actually, there's some reviews you. About how people hate me, too, and how I'm too medium woke and how I don't actually like horror. So don't leave any of those kind of reviews about Allison with an I and Allison with a Y, though, or we'll put you in the fucking grape crusher at the spoiler vineyard.
All right, guys, we're heading to the spoiler vineyard where we're going to get into all the spoilers of Heart Eyes, and we can't wait to see you there. Welcome back to Every Horror Movie on Netflix. We are in the spoiler vineyard where we're going to get into all of the spoilers for the movie Heart Eyes. Finally uncover who the Heart Eyes killer was, the H.E.K.
H.E.K. I mean, I started our first segment of discussion by talking about Devon Sawa, so I guess I'll bring him up again. Devon Sawa gets wasted by H.E.K. It's not a huge spoiler or plot development, but rip Devon Sawa.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Does he get an arrow through the head?
I don't remember. I don't think it was anything like super memorable or dramatic. At least, I mean, the Grape Crusher kind of sets a high bar for that in this movie, but it wasn't anything super memorable compared to that.
I can't remember.
I did like how Hard Ice Killer used a variety of scary tools, including an arrow contraption that was like spring-loaded arrow
like a crossbow
gun. Yeah.
crossbow, I think.
Yeah, it was like a small crossbow.
Yeah, mini
crossbow. Very like Cupid on the nose. Yes.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Wow, that is on the nose, and it didn't strike me at all until you said it just now. He also even has like little like custom heart tips on his arrows too.
He's got a lot of like heart accoutrements. Like everywhere he kind of goes, he leaves like rose petals and a heart with some kind of like bloody thing in the middle. And I guess we can talk about who he is. He is three people. Which was cool. There's so rarely more than one killer. Like, I love that twist.
I had a feeling that Hard Eyes Killer was either multiple people or there were copycats.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was the multiple people.
Yeah, that was part of why I guess I was underwhelmed with this twist. I don't know. I guess the multiple people element was not in and of itself bothersome to me, but I don't know. Even that has been done so many times at this point in the Scream franchise in particular.
Oh, that's true.
I don't even know how many Scream movies have had multiple killers. I feel like it's basically all of them at this point. Wasn't even the first one there were multiple killers, I think? There's two, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. That was like whatever to me. So it's Jordana Brewster, one of the cops, who are named Hobbs and Shaw. We haven't mentioned that. Yeah, another Fast and Furious reference.
Oh, I didn't get that reference.
Oh, yeah, it's blatantly called out in the movie, too.
I heard the call out in the movie, but I didn't get the reference to Fast and Furious.
Oh, yeah. So Hobbs and Shaw are a couple of characters from Fast and Furious that had a spinoff movie, Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham, a few years ago. It's not a good movie. Not even by the, like, good but not good standards of Fast and Furious. It's just a dull movie. Sorry, that's a big tangent. Hobbs and Shaw, I don't even know why they used those names. That was irrelevant to me in this movie. Like, why are we dropping a Fast and Furious joke in the horror rom-com mashup? Other than because Jordana Brewster is in it? I don't know. But anyway, she's one of the killers. And then another one is her like husband, who has shown up in exactly one scene prior to this.
Yeah, he was somebody who thought he recognized Allie from one of the dating apps.
From Bumble.
Implying that she had ignored him or whatever on there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because he shoots his shot.
He literally says, I'm going to shoot my shot. He shows up at the police station where there's total mayhem. And we see, I mean, I'm like, how many times did Hard Eyes get killed? Like, he's been shot. Yeah. He's been fucking stabbed. Like, so I think that was where I was clued into it might be more than one person. But the husband of Jordana Brewster, that was the scene that I laughed at the hardest, was the reveal. He pulls his mask off and Allie's like, who the fuck are you? And he's like, David or whatever. And she's like,
he's like the IT guy at the station.
So funny.
And then the third one is just somebody we don't know at all. And that's the one who gets unmasked first, because there's a big chase through the drive-in movie theater. Allie and Jay are trying to hide from the killer at this drive-in theater. They end up pulling up in a van where this couple is having sex at length in the back seat, while Allie and Jay are like bonding and kind of falling in love in the front, which was a very weird but charming scene. And then they finally get Hard Eyes, they kill him, pull a mask off, and it's just random person. They're like, who the fuck is this? Turns out that he is the lover of Jordana Brewster and her husband, who were like in a throuple and have some weird kink about killing people together.
But also are not remotely grieving their dead lover, which was very confusing. I'm like, well, clearly you did not care about this person.
Yeah, they don't seem terribly upset that he already got.
They even went so far to say, like, oh, he wasn't our boyfriend. He was just some fanatic of ours. Like, he was very disposable.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. This reveal, like I said before, was one of the more underwhelming things in the movie for me. Because at this point, there aren't a ton of suspects. You know, there's not, like, a big list of people who it could be. And it's just like, well, yeah, Jordana Brewster. Like, it would have been more interesting to me or more surprising if it was just some rando, I guess, or a group of people, a cabal of killers, or I don't know. It was just, it didn't do too much for me. Jordana Brewster does it up, though. I mean,
she's fantastic.
She does the whole cackling, evil sort of explaining my evil plan monologue. She does that well. That was fun.
Yeah, I don't know who else it could have been. It's like it could have been Monica or Monica's like sugar daddy who was right. like implied that he was old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been funny, actually. We've never seen him up to that point. That would have been sort of interesting. It could have been the boss.
Could have been the boss. Alex I boss. Also suspected the ex-boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. British guy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Just give me a slasher where there's a masked killer and it's not just one of the 10 yeah. other characters in the movie. You know, give me something a little different. That was in a movie that felt innovative and fresh to me. This twist was a little seen this
Scooby-Doo-ish.
Before, you know. Scooby-Doo-ish. Yeah, yeah. It was pretty Scooby-Doo. Fair. Yeah.
What I liked about the reveal was just the humor behind it. Like I said, it was one of the parts I laughed the hardest at. So I knew it was going to be Shaw. I knew it was going to be Jordana Brewster's character because she had the initials that were engraved on that ring. But so did Jay, right? So there was like the whole movie. It's like, is it him? Is it her? And then he's somewhere where the killer is and the killer's after him. But then she's somewhere where the killer is and the killer's after her. So like it plays on that red herring and it keeps you guessing, you know, like I truly was like, it's got to be one of the two of them. It wasn't, I wouldn't say the reveal was surprising or like reinventing the wheel. But I think, again, like this movie didn't take itself too seriously. So it was like I wasn't looking for perfection, right? I wanted a good laugh. And I will say like I laughed the hardest at like, I'm David. Like the fucking IT guy. And he's like the token yeah. Asian guy that you're just like, what are you doing here? You nerd, you know? And then he's such a nerd. Like the chemistry between him and Jordana Brewster, you know, she's this hot, domineering, you know, detective who's got like this dark side. And then she's got this like derpy IT guy husband who's just like riding her evil coattails. And it truly, that dynamic between them, I was dying. I was laughing really hard.
Yeah. That was great.
And then they'd be dying.
And then they'd be dying.
In grotesque fashion. Hers as we mentioned.
Oof. They wouldn't fucking die. Yeah. They wouldn't die.
They wouldn't die. And then when she finally did, I feel like that kill.
I'm trying to remember how that worked exactly. They impale her with a machete, I think, on the statue
no,
of St. Valentine.
They impale her on.
Oh,
there's
on the
a
statue.
Sword
yeah.
on the statue. Or
but wait a minute.
Or spear or something.
Come back to that. First, Allie stabs her in the neck with her reusable straw.
Oh, yeah.
Because, oh, yes.
Because that fucking reusable straw showed up in 10 scenes and we knew something was going to happen yeah. with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
She gets like roasted for her aluminum reusable straw time and time yeah. again.
Which I love a metal
Same.
Straw. And I love yeah. that being the setup that you know there's going to be a payoff. You know it's going to be used to stab somebody at some point. And I think it gets played out for so fucking long that I had almost forgotten about it. And so it was actually surprising and funny when she did that at the end. But yeah, then she ends up, Jordana ends up impaled on the St. Valentine statue.
Through her neck.
Which we are reminded just moments before that St. Valentine died by beheading, mm-hmm. and that's what happens to Jordana as well. Except it's not like just a clean beheading. She's just suspended by her neck, basically, and so it slowly rips, tears apart.
Yeah, her body just rips off. It's brutal. It's brutal.
It was disgusting. There was one other part that made me laugh really hard when, you know, Allie says she drops out of med school because she can't handle blood and she's really squeamish. And the scene at the drive-in, which to me was the scariest scene, the scene at the drive-in.
Yeah.
Because it was funny and then it was scary because you're like.
It was really tense.
It was really tense. And people are stuck in their cars and they have no way to move because of the way that they're lined up at the drive-in. Like that to me, I was like, fuck that. I don't like that. But then Jay kills Hard Eyes, so they think, stabs him in the chest, and Allie gets it in her mouth, and she starts throwing up. But it's like the most, like one of those hilarious vomit scenes where there's just like too much, and it like all over the place. And she does it twice, and I died. I laughed my ass off.
That was really funny.
David, meanwhile, gets David being the IT guy, the other killer, the other surviving killer, gets killed by. Candles, too many candles, death by candle.
I don't even know if that's what killed him ultimately.
I have no idea what killed him because at first he gets like one of the arrows through his like
Oh, yeah.
Part of his eye, like through like kind of the front of his face, but that doesn't kill him. It's not a lethal wound. It's just a really gnarly one. And well,
he eventually like falls into the candles.
He falls into the candles. He gets covered in candle wax. Mm-hmm. And then I think at the end, Jay gets another arrow through him, but like through the eye, like into the brain.
Oh, okay.
And that's the lethal kill.
That's the final blow.
Yeah, I think so.
The shot of him just dripping, his skin just dripping off with candle wax was fucking disgusting and amazing.
So mm-hmm. gross.
Yeah, he's like covered in candle wax by the end of this scene, like literally just covered.
I will say,
I think he actually gets burned somehow too.
Well, he fell on the candles. They had a ton of candles set up for the big reveal in the church.
Yeah.
How about when they give Allie the option to, there's one bullet in a gun and she has the option to kill herself or to kill Jay. And if she chooses to kill herself, then she will prove that love conquers all.
Yeah.
And she like does neither because she's a terrible shot, but she somehow shot Jay. I was just like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah. She shoots him through the shoulder and then the bullet goes through it and gets Jordana Brewster.
Yeah.
Through like the stomach or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, she's an incredible shot, actually. Because she says sorry to Jay before she does it because she's like, I know this is going to hurt you, but I need this to go through you to get her and turn the table.
I guess
here.
I was remembering the earlier scene in the police station where she shoots off like the 13 bullets and she misses them all. And he's like, you're a terrible shot.
That's right.
So yeah. I truly think she just got lucky with that last shot in the chapel or the cathedral or whatever.
Yeah.
Just a ridiculous scene.
That was funny. I forgot about that police station scene. I was like, how many fucking bullets are in this gun, actually?
Too many. Too many for that chamber.
Too many. Yeah, yeah, that's not factually correct. I think all in all, there were plot holes and there were some misses, some attempts, swings and misses. But I really did enjoy that. Again, I don't think this movie took itself too seriously. And I think mm-hmm. the directors let the actors have some fun, like as referenced by the Hobbs and Shaw, you know, like maybe they were just like, fuck it, Jordana Brewster, you were in this movie. Let's throw a line in there for that. Like, it just didn't feel like anything was overly masterminded. I think it was just mm-hmm. like, this is the movie that we made. And I really think people appreciated that because it felt very authentic, you know?
I already used this word, but it really felt so fresh to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I can't think of another horror rom-com.
Right. And that's like, you know, it's weird to call a movie full of tropes as fresh, but it used those tropes very intentionally, not out of laziness, because a lot of times tropes are used out of laziness because people don't want to think of their own new, fresh ideas. But it was used in a way that, honored the genres and poked fun at the genres at the same time.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
There's a lot of sincerity and a lot of love.
There's only so much you can do anymore with horror, right? Like, we could call almost everything a trope because there's only so much you can do. So, like, you know.
And we have access to everything that has ever existed thanks to the internet and streaming. So we have higher media awareness than anyone ever has in history. And so we are so much more likely to be like, oh, that's a trope, you know, which we're not wrong, but also just like, that's the basic level of discourse that we can have about these things. Cause we've seen so much shit that it's like, oh yeah, I've seen that before, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's easy to say about a movie.
That's a really good point. So my favorite part was at the end when Allie says, she looks at the statue of St. Valentine's and she goes, your day sucks. Yes. And I was like, we're back to hating love.
And then 1 year later, not so much.
Oh, Jesus. 1 year later, she proposes to Jay.
Valentine's Day, back at the drive-in theater. Mm-hmm. He at first proposes them moving in. She says, I don't want a key. And then she proposes to him and has a ring.
I want you.
Oh,
it was cute. Fuck them.
It was cute.
It was fine.
It was cute. Fuck them.
It was fine.
Again, well written, well performed. It was just charming.
It was.
Do you guys do Valentine's Day? Do you guys like Valentine's Day or is that too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've learned to like it. I never really celebrated Valentine's Day with anybody before I was in a relationship with Patrick. So, like, you know, it was it was nice to finally have somebody to celebrate it with. And I guess I appreciate it. But before I was ever with Patrick, I spent like most of my adulthood very, very, very single. And every year I would like make heart-shaped cupcakes and watch like my favorite kind of like anti-romance films.
Nice.
The ones that it was just like everything ends horribly. That was my old tradition. And I really liked that tradition. So I'm not inherently a Valentine's person, but I've grown to appreciate it.
Yeah, it's nice when you have someone to celebrate it with.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I like to do things. I like to go out. I like to eat dinner. I like to get drinks. And I like to give people gifts. So it's just like one extra reason a year to do that. I also love like chocolate samplers, like Whitman's fucking chocolate samplers. I'll buy that because actually Allison doesn't love those, but I do. So I'll just buy them for myself at Valentine's Day.
I'll have like two. Yeah. Out of
it. That's amazing. I could see this being a lot of people's like a lot of people that don't love Valentine's Day. This being their new like watch every Valentine's Day movie.
Absolutely. Mm, yeah. I think it's a good candidate for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
This movie, I definitely, after watching this, I was like, oh, I have to watch this every Valentine's Day from now on, or like around that time of the year. And it reminded me that I've actually never seen the most, I think it's fair to say, the most iconic like horror Valentine's movie of all time, My Bloody Valentine.
I haven't either.
Have you seen that?
Okay. I haven't seen it.
Nope, yeah. And I thought about that right away because I was like, what other horror Valentine's movies are there? And that's the one that stands out.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess maybe I'll do a double feature of that next year or something like that.
Oh boy.
We'll see. This ends with, of course, in typical slasher fashion, a nod to the possibility that it's not actually all over because Monica has been like secretly taking pictures of the proposal at the drive-in theater. And she's on the phone with Allie, you know, congratulating her, you go girl, whatever. And then the call cuts off dramatically with a dramatic musical sting. And then we go to the credits. Do y'all want to see more Hard Eyes? I do.
I'd watch another one.
Yeah.
No, I don't want more.
This is good enough.
Yeah. I don't think they can do better. And I don't think it'll be as good. So leave it where it is.
I know that the chances are not good. But also, you know, Christopher Landon did Happy Death Day to You, and that's a movie where I would have said the high concept of the first, like, you can't really do much more with this, you milked it out, and then the second one was great. So I could, if he was on board, I could get pretty excited about a second one, and I just love a fucking franchise anyway, so even if they make a shitty Hard Eyes 2, I'd go see it.
Yeah, I got nothing against it. I think because I didn't hold this movie to like a super duper high standard, I'm just gonna be happy to like be there, you know?
Yeah,
fair. Yeah.
Just happy to be here.
Yeah.
All right. So what are we doing next episode? I think it's Allison with a Y's turn to pick a movie, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'm gonna do something a little out of left field.
Love it.
So my choice is a Chinese horror film, ooh, Chinese horror comedy,
ooh,
called Dead Talents Society.
Dead Talents Society.
Yep. And the little Netflix blurb says, a sheepish rookie ghost must scare the living or risk vanishing forever. With help from a once lauded mentor, she works to master the art of haunting.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It sounds like a time.
What a premise.
And you know me, I love some ghosts, and I don't think I've ever really heard of anything quite like this. So let's fucking go.
We'll have to wear a sheet and stand on a desk and recite, what's the poem?
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Oh, Captain, my Captain. All right, well, we'll be watching Dead Talents? T-A-L-E-N-T-S?
Yes.
Okay, Society, next time on Every Horror Movie on Netflix. Until then, visit the website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. Check us out on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amoncast, E-H-M-O-N-Cast, and TikTok at Amonpodcast. You can also join our Discord community. There's a link to that in the show notes. And leave us those glowing reviews for your lovely Allisons, or leave a review for Allie from Hard Eyes. I don't fucking know. Shake it up. Allison with an I, you want to take us home from the spoiler vineyard?
Yeah. For every horror movie on Netflix, I am Allison with an I.
I'm Allison with a Y.
And I'm Patrick.
See you next time.
Bye.
Happy Valentine's Day in 12 months.
And fuck you.